The Environment, Agriculture, and Flooding Subcommittee will now come to order. Lexi, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan.
Here.
Vice Chair Cheney.
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Alexander. Democratic Ranking Member Alexander. Representatives Brannon. Representative Brannon.
Here.
Posada Cabrera.
Here.
Daley. Daley. Diamond.
Here.
Fine. Fine. Hardy excused. Hunchowski.
Here.
Lamarca excused. McFarland.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Umfroy. Representative Umfroy. Overdorf. Representative Overdorf. Tomko.
Here.
Trunow.
Here.
We have a quorum, Chair.
Thank you, Lexi. Announcements, members. Please make sure you remember to turn off or move your cell phone and or electronic device to silent. Good afternoon, members, and welcome to the Environment, Agriculture, and Flooding Subcommittee, Week 2. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce Lexi Rando, who will be our new administrative assistant. Welcome. Beautiful name. Members, today we're going to have two presentations, and the Department of Environmental Protection with Deputy Secretary John Truitt of Regulatory Programs. For the first presentation, we're going to hear a little bit more about the implementation of the Clean Waterways Act. And I think a lot of us are looking forward to hearing more about that. After each presentation, what we're going to do is we'll take some Q&A from members. So without further ado, Mr. Deputy Secretary, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Members, appreciate the opportunity to be here today, so I will jump right into this. So as we remember, Senate Bill 712, or the Clean Waterways Act, was actually probably one of the most comprehensive water quality bills the state has seen in years. It focused on improving existing systems such as septic and stormwater, wastewater, and it also touched on agricultural best management practices. The main highlights we have up there, so we had increased contingency plans for power outages, because when you look at storms in the state of Florida and you look at sanitary sewer overflows, usually in the neighborhood of 60 to 70% of them are due to power outages and or power outages from flooding. It also includes provision of financial records for those disposal systems so we can ensure that they're being appropriately cap expenditures moving forward. Detailed documentation of fertilizer use by ag operations and corresponding enforcement when that doesn't come in. And two big ones, the bottom two there, updating the stormwater rules, because our stormwater regulations were running mid-80s design criteria, so updating that and pulling that forward, and regulating septic tanks as a source of nutrients as well, and moving the oversight to DEP. So jump into reuse. We've got phase one and phase two. The ideas behind this was to implement the Potable Reuse Commission 2020's report, Advancing Potable Reuse in Florida, and to revise our rules to make sure that this could be implemented. So once it's done, we're going to have the revised rules. It's going to cover aquifer storage, recovery and recharge, reclaim in general, indirect potable reuse, which is another phrase for aquifer recharge, and a framework for direct potable. Now you see here it says phase one and complete, and phase two is currently underway. Phase one was opening up the rules. At one point, we had 35 chapters open, so anyone that's done rulemaking understands that's a lot to kind of play with at one time. We opened up phase one to get rid of any of those rules that were either outdated or would directly conflict with reuse, so it was a lot of striking through phase one. Phase two, we've actually kind of split that into two, 2A, which is the one that's being finalized right now, which marries up the various drinking water and wastewater regulations, because you're looking at reuse coming from wastewater, but getting back to the drinking water side. And then we're opening up 2B, which is the implementation of direct potable reuse. So we expect a lot of those to be done completely finished, hopefully before next summer. But like I said, we've done, I think, a lot of the hard work in terms of cleanup. It was good to see. We got a lot of engagement in our workshops on this topic. So there's a lot of people that are interested. I know there's been surveys done. And generally speaking, you see a lot of people in the state of Florida that are amenable to potable reuse. So I think everyone's still working on the education aspect of that, because I know if you just looked back 10 years, there was concern. But we're not seeing as much of that now or much pushback. Getting to wastewater collection systems. So this is a big deal to get at the SSOs and ensure that utilities are appropriately investing in their collection system. Prior to the Clean Waterways Act, our regulations said we could examine a utility's collection system if it caused a malfunction at the plant or leaked and violated water quality standards. So there wasn't an ongoing technical oversight. You get a permit to build the collection system, but after that, if nothing goes awry, we didn't have regulatory oversight. The Clean Waters Act changes that. So aside from putting in the power outage contingency plan, they have to use inflow and infiltration studies to do pipe assessments. There are some pipes in the state of Florida that are wooden and have been in place since the 1910s, for example. There are other pipes that are very, very old lead pipe that have not been relined in the last 40 years, which exceeds their lifespan. So being able to actually preemptively tell people that they have to do I&I plans and then report that information to the department on a yearly basis is very beneficial. The way the rulemaking stands right now, we're wrapping that up. It would be a 25% evaluation of your lines every 5 years. So it's kind of these five-year window times. And that's to, based on our workshops, addressing the concern, you know, you have some utilities with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of pipes, and it might not be economically or technically feasible to knock all of those out in the first year or two. Once they do that, they'll come in with an annual report that's going to show the expenditures in their collection system and a five-year rolling CapEx maintenance plan to replace aged pipes and those types of items. We've also gotten those rules that setbacks and vertical horizontal separation for systems with drinking water wells and lines. You see in a lot of areas in the state of Florida that have older collection systems, there weren't regulations in place. They may be adjacent to one another. You dig to fix one, you wind up breaking the other, and you can have those cross-contamination problems. The emergency response plans, we specifically included hurricanes. Those have to be looked at annually. And there's additional reporting requirements now for non-compliance events. So now if you've had an SSO, you're going to have to submit a report not only to the department about the SSO, but your annual report for your expenditures regarding your collection systems and everything. And we're going to compile all those and provide them to the legislature and the governor's office. And the idea behind this was to kind of put the light on which utilities are doing the right thing and put it out in the public so everyone knows and everyone can see. I know some utilities are very good about reports to their customer base, and some are not. So we'll get all that in one spot, and then everybody can look at it at one time. And that would also inform better decision-making moving forward. Do we need additional regulation, or what do we need to tweak? That rule is going to require ratification by the legislature. I can tell you that right now, looking in the somewhere the $200 to $400 million impact over 5 years when you look at all the utilities in the state of Florida. So that will be coming, not this session, next session for ratification. Biosolids was a big piece in the Clean Water Act. The original regulations on biosolids, I think everyone recognized that they didn't adequately take into account not only runoff and those types of surface water impacts, but the groundwater impacts that can easily migrate to neighboring surface waters and get the nutrients in our surface waters. After we had done a biosolids TAC, we had the rule up to get ratified, so that is in place. It was effective June 21st, 2021. It requires additional monitoring, additional reporting, but it also excludes areas where the water table could be impacted by application unless there is a very, very specific and detailed plan of how they're going to ensure that they're not going to impact the water table. Obviously, geologically in the state of Florida, if you think about areas in South Florida, this could potentially take a lot of those areas off the map for purposes of biosolids, given the high water table and lots of surface waters. Then we've got our stormwater. which we've had multiple TAC meetings, and in August, we also took a summary of the meetings we'd had thus far and presented it to the Blue-Green Algae Task Force so they could give us some feedback if they'd like to. We've had 11 meetings. We've got another one coming up October 19th. And as I mentioned at the beginning, the idea is to open up the entire rules for the design of stormwater. A lot has changed since they were last done, not only in terms of understanding the systems and the impacts, but in terms of monitoring, better engineering, better technology. When you see a lot of, near the algae blooms and those items and stuff like that, you usually have high areas with stormwater runoff. Is it the only cause? No, not necessarily, but it certainly contributes a lot of nutrients to waterways. So the idea would be coming up with rules to redo all of those standards. And again, that I'm going to guess, I don't have a dollar figure right now, but I'm going to guess with a revamp of the stormwater systems in the state of Florida, that would likely require ratification as well. And then we have the on-site sewage program transfer. So it was originally, DOH had the septic systems. And the primary concern when you looked at the statute was the public health risk of getting, E. coli and those types of things in drinking water. Not much else was looked at, and most of the setbacks were designed around that concern. What you discover is nutrients actually travel a lot farther in the ground than you would see from E. coli and that type of idea. So this moves it over to us, so included on top of the public health aspect, the nutrient aspect. So we got 12 people from DOH's Tallahassee office that came over with the program. We've coordinated with the 67 county health departments because the county health departments are the one that actually do permitting inspections. And we have an agreement right now, an interagency agreement that's lasting for 5 years, that operationally the county health departments are still going to be doing the inspections and the permitting. But we handle the higher level enforcement and are going through the rulemaking right now. So right now we have an OSTDS TAC that is supposed to be looking at not only the existing regulations, but what setbacks should you consider for prevention of nutrients, what new technologies should be brought into rule. It's those rules in terms of the technology in septic tanks has been rather static for a while. So they're looking at a lot of different options to bring in. We just had our second meeting yesterday, and I think the next one is the first week of November. And finally, it had agricultural best management practices, which is currently underway. So in February 2021, 6,033 parcels had come over for enforcement. We had to wind up sorting through some of those. So you can see the numbers, 3,261 were unlikely to have had agricultural activity in May of 2021. So it actually dumped down to 2,772 parcels for us to take enforcement on. So we've been, that's a large number. We've been rolling through that. In 4 months, we've got about 67% of the parcels in compliance. We haven't had our first case go to DOA yet for potential enforcement, but we do have one that is moving through the system and looks like it'll go that way. So we will see how that goes. What is important is of these parcels, of the remaining parcels that aren't in compliance, only 14 are greater than 100 acres. So many of them are at least smaller parcels. I can't express enough, my amazement at the folks on that side of the house at DEP that chewed through this many parcels that quickly. It was a lot to look at. But we will see, like I said, when the first case goes to DOA, how that works out. So that was all I had there. And obviously, Mr. Chair and members, questions.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary. I appreciate that thorough presentation. What I'd like to do now is open it up to questions from members. Representative McFarland, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really impressed by those numbers that of the best management practices and the agricultural parcels y'all have gone through. Can you just give a little more clarity as to what some of the offenders, what does that look like, even on the small parcels?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
From the small parcels, it ranges anywhere from not keeping adequate records, over fertilizing and those types of things. And many of them, well, to the fact that none have gone to litigation yet, letters went out and then they came back into compliance. My guess, I'm a recovering attorney, so my guess is that's an education issue and not a purposeful, sidestepping of the BMPs. But So now that the awareness is out there and now that that entire community understands what we're looking at, I would think that would be even better moving forward.
Representative McFarland for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a geographic part of the state that you would say more of the offenders are in versus others?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
I'm going to ask one of my colleagues. It's actually in that area.
Good morning. Thank you. To answer your question, so currently that those numbers reflect the letters and the information that were sent out for South Florida. It focused on our basin management action plan areas for Lake Okeechobee, the St. Lucie, and Coosawhatchee. The majority of agriculture is in the Lake Okeechobee Basin, so kind of, I don't know that, you know, but I would say most of them are probably in that basin.
Representative Overdorf, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, and thank you for being here today, John. I really appreciate it. When we're looking at a couple different items here, the detailed reporting on the fertilizer application, I know that was a big part of this bill. The data that you're receiving, would you say it's comprehensive? It's allowing you to look at, is your staff able to look at then at the next level? And is there any coordination with either IFAS or DAX on those application rates as they apply to the soils in those areas as well?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
So I would say, yes, obviously there's coordination with DAX and conversations with IFAS to look at that because the application rates, you know, DAX in their rulemaking would wind up setting that. But obviously with all the water quality experts we have in our side of the house at DEP can heavily weigh in on that. I would say the data is good, but maybe we haven't seen long enough impacts to know if there's something else missing. I mean, to be honest, in terms of the age of this program and actually holding everyone's feet to the fire to follow these records and get these records over, it's a lot to wade through. So I wouldn't want to speculate and say we're missing X today, because that may not be the key to it.
Representative Overdorf, follow up.
When we're dealing with the rural homesteads, basically, and dealing with one of the parts of the bill that was taken out was an area that, if it was 50 acres or below, that DAX would not be doing the BMP program on it initially. If we had taken out that those 50-acre parcels or below that were not considered certified agricultural operations, I'm therefore assuming that the number of cases that were reported to you would drop dramatically, considering you had, I think, 12 parcels that were 14, or excuse me, they're 100 acres or more?
Yes, that would be, I think that correlation would be accurate.
And therefore you would have a drop, obviously, in the required FTE for all of your personnel that were reviewing this, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Members, questions? Representative Trunow, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for your presentation today. So in the past, have we had this many folks out of compliance in the past?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you. I would have to check with DAX, sir, because originally it was for their oversight. So I don't want to guess. Like I said, it seems to be that a lot of notification letters and people moving into compliance rather rapidly was an educational or awareness issue, not a purposefully flaunting. So that's what makes me hesitate to put a number out there at all.
Follow up.
Representative Trunow, follow up.
So looking at the BMP manuals for all the agricultural products that we have and some of the revamps that are going on, I think that, you know, some of the fertilizer requirements for different products needs to be looked at on a more regular basis to take in consideration, you know, those needs for that plant and more specific species to do a better job of figuring out what the real requirements are. So as we move forward, I think we'll see some changes as well as on fertilizer issues.
Deputy Secretary, you wish to opine?
Yeah, I appreciate that, sir. And obviously, that's something that not only with our chief science officer and our relationships with IFAS, that we'll keep that dialogue with DACs from our water quality perspective to make sure that, you know, we keep a finger on the pulse of that, because that is important.
Representative Funchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. This is really remarkable to see all the work that you're doing to improve water quality and this wonderful legislation. My question is, what effect would any rollbacks on this have on the work you're doing, and any thoughts you may have on that?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
In rollbacks, I just want to clarify, Representative, you mean a loosening of restrictions or a removal of additional regulation? That's what I'm assuming you mean.
Chair.
Representative Hunchowski.
Yes, correct.
From the effects of rollbacks, I mean, obviously, any rollback is going to place a situation where you could have more harmful impacts to water quality. It would require a lot of additional rulemaking. But I think, you know, once these rules, as they're kind of staggering going into effect, you know, it takes a few years to really see the benefits. I mean, obviously, none of these are, oh, you fixed your collection system today. So there's going to be a lag time to see those effects. But obviously, this entire thing is geared toward protecting water quality from both a surface and groundwater perspective. So I think it's logical to say if you took anything back, you're taking back part of a shield that I think a lot of people worked a long time to build.
Vice Chair Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan. Thank you, Secretary, for this presentation. We have five-year plans in place for different pieces of this legislation, and then there are things that are having probably immediate impacts, like the fertilizers. So, can you give any kind of projections on what kind of results we may be seeing as an effect of this, as a result of the Clean Water Act in short-term, long-term?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
We're actually working on that internally. What's beneficial with our chief science officer, since he's a hydrogeologist, he sees obviously all the direct impacts of that. So that is obviously the big question, is what are we getting out of this? I know since biosolids went in effect in June of this year, that will probably be the first kind of data and visuals that we can roll in. The collection systems is going to be a very, very long time thing, because with the way that it's going to be set up to repair and inspect those. With stormwater regulations, those, again, would be ratified in the 2023 session. So that's why it's a little premature to say. But to my point, biosolids is what we're working on right now to see, because we've already seen, you know, sites that have had to either drastically change the monitoring or drastically change the application rates. And so we can start, you know, analyzing that data and get something out.
Representative Cheney, follow up.
Thank you. So am I hearing you say we're going to be getting some reporting as you get that in terms of impact and results and timeline?
Deputy Secretary?
Yes, Representative. Yes.
Representative Mooney for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You touched on the reuse of water after it's treated to put back into aquifer or ecosystems. Are you working with stormwater utilities, wastewater utilities, and aqueduct authorities across the state to get a game plan in place for that potential reuse and reapplication of fresh water back into the ecosystem, either be it through the aquifer for drinking or restoring, perhaps like where I live in District 120, the Florida Bay is very important. We have a plan sort of already written. We're trying to figure out how to implement it to help restore some of that estuaries down to Florida Bay, because we know it's working well to the north of the lake, to the south of the lake, but was a lot of stormwater runoff and utility waters that could be used to help restore the Everglades, particularly in the Florida Bay area. So are you working with these utilities and aqueduct authorities to set up a game plan for how to do this effectively? And are you going to require all wastewater systems to be upgraded to a higher standard? For instance, in the Florida Keys, we have the most stringent standard in the country for our wastewater. It's really, you can drink it when it comes out, basically. So it's important that it's not just a matter of just the grounds, but the standards have to be increased as well. Otherwise, we're back to square one again. So is that in place?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
To the first part of your question, Representative, I know the associations that represent utilities and the stormwater associations, I'm not sure about the Aqueduct Authority off the top of my head, but I know there was a lot of engagement in terms of keeping them in the loop about the reuse and getting you know, they're the ones that actually have to implement it, so we don't want to write something that can't be done. And to the second part of your question about the wastewater standards, so we did have a recent bill passed last session that was passed into law, right, that eliminated surface water discharges. So if you're looking at reuse and you're looking at the reuse for the potential of hydration of areas or recovering other areas, that's going to have to apply the numeric nutrient criteria for that area. So it's going to, those are very specific around the state. So you would have, depending on the receiving water body or that estuary area or those wetlands, it's going to be set based on that, what that ecology needs.
Members, questions? Representative Diamond, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Deputy Secretary, for the presentation. I just wanted to clarify if I understand on the best management practices, because my recollection is consistent with what I heard about the bill, which was that it did sort of say we should start or prioritize the basin management action plan to focus on in that southern part of the state, you know, around Lake Okeechobee. But we have those basin management action plans all over the state, and we've had a huge crisis in Tampa Bay with the water quality, with the algae blooms and the public health associated with that. So can you talk a little bit about how you're working or planning to work elsewhere in the state on these issues?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, that was prioritized in the bill, but we're moving through all of them in the basin management action plans. They're actually on a cycle where they, you know, they actually rotate through on a certain timing issue. So as they come up, they can be looked at. But then I know DAX is also working on rulemaking for the BMPs as well. That's not to say that something couldn't be, say a BMP is done and the basin management action plan is not to be looked at for 4 years, that's not to say that it couldn't be opened and inserted. So, I mean, there's not anything that would preclude us from acting sooner. But yes, to your point, that southern area was the focus, but still rotating through all of the rest.
Follow up, Rip Diamond.
I do have a follow-up. I'll just say, as a comment, I would encourage you to act sooner. You know, I'm glad to hear there's nothing in the legislation that precludes you from doing that, because from my perspective, you know, we don't really have the luxury here of taking an incremental approach given the challenges we're having with our water quality. On the enforcement piece, I just want to understand it, because I know you're a very good lawyer and I'm interested in this. The cases where you've got a landowner that is not complying, you know, with the education, outreach, the letter, do you feel like you've got what you need statutorily to enforce that? I mean, or is that still going to be an open question once you try to litigate some of these cases?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
I'm hoping OGC is not going to get too mad at me for speaking out of turn about their folks, but a lot of the requirements that were set up in rule, I think it's good enough. Like when looking at it in terms of, you know, the enforcement standard in front of an ALJ, I don't think there would be an issue. I really don't. But like I said, that was kind of the point of when we see this first case go up, representative, we'll find out if an ALJ doesn't interpret it as clearly as we think it is.
Rep Diamond, follow up?
Nope, thank you.
Ranking Member Alexander, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if you've already spoken on this, Deputy Secretary, I do apologize, but I'd love to get an update on the 404 flood mitigation program. If you've already shared some insights on that or have any perspective to give, that would be fantastic.
And Ranking Member Alexander, we're going to be talking about that a little bit probably next week as well, but Deputy Secretary, you're recognized. Okay.
Thank you. So just an update on the 404 program in general? So I can go over the quick. I'll be giving the presentation next Thursday, so you'll see me back and it'll be a lot more detailed. Generally speaking, so we have dedicated increased staffing resources as of, I believe, Monday, if my numbers are right. We'd had 3,108 applications come in through the House. That's including the 560 or so that came over from the Corps on December 23rd. We have officially processed, as in taken action, either denied or issued between general permits, individual permits, no permit required, close to 410, and approximately 750 have been withdrawn by the applicant themselves.
Ranking Member for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we can have a more in-depth conversation next week, but of that cohort specifically, how many of those permits were actually approved and issued?
Deputy Secretary, recognized.
Of the 410, only 22 were denials. So that means, I believe it's close to 30 individual permits, which are the big complex ones, and roughly evenly split between no permit required and general permits.
Right. And just a general comment, and I'll be done.
Ranking Member.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And next week in your presentation, we'd love to hear more about, you know, the available technologies like drones that perform walks in regards to the program. And I'm sure you're going to give some insight on that. That would greatly appreciate that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, questions? Representative Overdorf.
Thank you, Chairman, for one small bite at the apple here. So I just want to run back to the enforcement side and understanding on the BMPs, of the cases that you received, and I'm making a general assumption here that you have a statutory timeline in which to respond under the BMTP requirements under the Clean Water Act, that they have to either A, respond, or go to enforcement, which is you all. And as I understand it from DAC's personnel, they only have so many people that can go to so many farms. So I'm curious as to how many of the quote-unquote enforcement cases that you received actually never even were able to get a visit from DAC. And I'm not faulting DAC here. I want to make that perfectly clear because there's limited personnel associated with it. Of those, you know, how many actually never even got a site visit, never had a review before they were entered into the enforcement side?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you. I don't know off the top of my head, Representative, but we can certainly go back and pull that number because I don't want to speculate or throw out a percentage and be wrong on that.
Members, we're in questions. Questions? Representative Umfroy? No? Okay. Looks as though that's concluded our questions, members. Great questions on the topic. Deputy Secretary, we're going to keep you in the hot seat here for one more presentation, and we'll look forward to hearing a little bit on this next presentation about the on-site sewage program, which is also tangentially connected to what we were just discussing. Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So jumping right into on-site sewage. These are the stats. The map is a little older, but the numbers are correct. About 2.4 million on-site sewage treatment and disposal systems. That's the OSTDS. Forgive me, I use the word septic all the time because it's much easier than letters. Generally speaking, you can see where in the areas of the state you see that. Right now, based on those locations, roughly less than 40% are in truly environmentally sensitive areas. And obviously out in a lot of rural areas or rural, sprawling type towns, it would be difficult for a wastewater treatment plant to effectively get lines to all of its customers, both from a cost perspective and from a technical perspective. You'd have a lot of lines that are stretching for miles that is potentials for breaks just to serve one or two people. So as I briefly mentioned earlier, the intent behind modern septic tanks is to protect the public from waterborne illnesses. And that's the E. coli and those other things getting into either the groundwater that people may drink, quite frequently when you see folks on a septic tank, they might also have a well, or migrating over to a surface water that's nearby. So the drain field of a septic tank breaks down the viruses and pathogens and can reduce nitrogen 10 to 50%, which at the time, right, this technology was developed, that was good. Knowing what we know today, that's not enough to protect our waterways. The density of septic currently under the existing rules is tied to the drinking water source, so your lot size and how many gallons per day it can handle. So the point of the Clean Waterways Act, as I mentioned, was to change septic from a purely public health aspect to take into account the environmental factors that are going to happen. You also see a lot of local, there's kind of a local mishmash around the state of local ordinances requiring more treatment. And then there's specific statutory criteria in certain key areas, the Florida Keys, Ocala River, and Suwannee River. And there's also other statutes that allow higher treatment in exchange for permitting on challenging lots. So if you didn't meet the minimum lot size for a standard septic tank, it was too small, then you can use one of the advanced septic tanks or additional treatment type systems and still get a septic tank permitted. And then, of course, there's the conflict provision in the BMAP that if it conflicts with the septic remediation plan, you can't put it in, period. So there's lots of rules and regulations that exist in the septic world, but to revisit 712, we transferred 12 folks, and then the county health departments are currently operating under the agreement we have with them that'll go 5 years. I do want to touch on that briefly. So the agreement was put in place for 5 years, not only because of the language in the Clean Waterways Act, but we wanted to ensure that it wasn't a complete upheaval of the entire system. With the county health departments doing the permitting and inspections, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of extra bodies around the state of Florida that it probably would not have been efficient to uproot them and make them all of a sudden DEP folks. But when the agreement expires, I fully expect, if I'm still lucky enough to be here, to be back in front of everybody else that's here and explaining what else we may need to tweak to make it better. And so currently what it oversees, we have the septic tank contractor registration and business authorization. So they have certain training that they have to have. There was an existing statewide variance program that had a variance review and advisory committee. We are also providing interpretation, development, and guidance to the CHDs while we're going through this TAC and rulemaking process, technical assistance. Also, the training for the certified environmental health professionals, and all of these where you see training or registration, those are all statutorily required entities that operate in the septic world. And research to evaluate the performance and environmental health benefits of septic. So the county health departments, this you can see the numbers. They do, like I said, they do the vast majority of all that field work, and it's a lot. So these are the numbers that were provided to us from DOH. So the construction permits and inspections, over the course of 4 years, you had 43,000 permits and 69,000 inspections for regular run-of-the-mill septic tanks. For the next category, where you're talking operating permits and inspections for aerobic treatment units or the performance-based treatment systems, which are a little more complex, you saw 17,000 systems and 17,000 inspections in one calendar year. And then permits and inspections for the entities that are providing a regulated service. So if you think about those kind of remote areas in terms of RV parks and those types of things that might have a septic system because it's so small, they're a regulated entity. They kind of fall in another category for tracking purposes. Now, the interesting trend line from what we see, over the last 4 years roughly, is the growing increasing trend in new permits, but a not corresponding trend perfectly in terms of repair permits. That's due to a number of different reasons. A lot of times, I think the repair techniques are getting better, but a lot of the other issues is, you've seen local ordinances and local requirements and issues like that, that if a septic tank reaches a certain age, you might have to just replace it, or you'll see people connecting to new sewage. And then the new tanks going in are obviously better technology and last longer with the materials and everything else. So we're not seeing the corresponding repair increase as the use goes. So enforcement. The county health departments are going to work with our OGC to handle enforcement. So when the county health department does an inspection, if it's a lower level violation or something like that, they can issue the citation themselves. The easy way to think of it for division purposes is if it gets to litigation, it comes to us. So they, at DOH, they call their citations, which is our version of a short form consent order, which just means no corrective action required. Here's your penalty, pay your penalty fee and go about your business. When you get into the what we call a long form consent order, which is a penalty, and then you must do X, Y, and Z, we will help them draft those. And then if the person doesn't sign them and wants to challenge it, then we'll be the ones that wind up taking it to the ALJ. And it falls under those three main categories of statutes. So you've got the regular septic regulation. It can fall under sanitary nuisances, with the neighbors complaining there's an issue in their yard, or it's constantly smelling, or it's, always flooding all of the time. And then you have under 489 part 3, you have the septic tank contractor regulations where they have to maintain their regulation certification and keep records and those types of things. So lots of rules that are developed under all of those chapters, and that's all of the areas that you can wind up finding enforcement. And this is the main rule as it exists for the standards of septic today in 62-6. Again, it was under DOH. So it's got the requirements in general, including modification, repair, abandonment, permitting standards, and the construction material requirements, and all of the conventional systems. And then it has a few of the more advanced systems. That was one of the issues I know that came up discussion during the Clean Waterways Act, was that DOH wasn't adding new systems as they were kind of coming online. And that's an issue actually we started at our septic tech yesterday, and our next meeting is all looking at the new technologies that are out there and what do we need to get into rules so people have access to that and can make it better. There's a specific chapter there on the Florida Keys, and then you've got the registration of the contractors, then there's performance-based, and then the fees. So the items in the rules are fairly typical for what you'd see for a regulatory scheme. So what we likely see as just a first glance at these rules in terms of the changes that are going to come out, looking at the in-ground nitrogen reducing biofilters, because if you'll remember, average septic takes out 10 to 50% of the nitrogen, and we know now that's not enough clearly, and it can migrate very quickly in underground or surface waterways. Looking at septage and food establishment sludge, because it interacts differently in the drain field and in the tank than other wastes. Also portable restrooms, the aerobic treatment units, and drain fields, specifically on drain fields, size, depth, composition. Obviously in different areas of the state, they can act drastically differently, not only based on your water table, but the soil type and everything else. Current regulations touch on that, but the science shows that it should be adjusted. Also look at the remediation plans and the BMAPs and the innovative systems permitting, like I said. And so we look forward to getting the tax insight on that. So the Clean Waterways Act, what did it require? It required us to adopt new rules regarding septic and then created this technical advisory committee, which was supposed to look at specifically nutrient-reducing septic systems, the use of NSF 245 systems, which are an advanced type of system which can have a nitrogen reduction far exceeding 50%. That was a system that specifically came up during the Clean Waterways Act that people had wanted DOH to put in rule before but had not been done yet. So we'll certainly tackle that one. Also going to look at setback distances, surface water, groundwater, and wells. So as you see, it's got 10 members. They're all across the board in terms of professions. You know, you have installers and repairers, and you have, you know, hydrologists and septic haulers and environmental groups. So they started up August 1. The recommendations will be in front of this legislature by January 1 of this year. So you all will get to chew on it this session. And of course, I'll be happy to come back if anybody's got questions about that. And the TAC technically expires August 15th, 2022. So the recommendations that would come up in January 1, we expect to address if there's any fundamental changes to the program that needed to be made, technologies to consider, perhaps additional requirements to look at, like maybe we're missing something, and also looking at setbacks and those types of things. They're going all the way through August because obviously with the feedback of the legislature getting this report, they can still go back to the table and kind of chew through and refine it so we have the best product available for our rulemaking. And so that concludes, but in case anyone was curious, I actually threw the slide in. That's my folks that are here in Tallahassee that deal with septic. I know there's been some confusion on where that's housed or how we get a hold of somebody. And as always, I mentioned, I know there was confusion during the transfer. County health departments are proceeding as they used to with permits inspections. We provide the technical guidance now, but obviously if any members or constituents have issues, just call me and I'll get everybody in touch with the right people. We had a kind of a kerfluffle in July. People weren't sure what was going on and our phones were blowing up. So I wanted to make sure this was available. And that was all I had, Chair and members. Happy for questions.
Deputy Secretary, thank you for the presentation, members. We're opening it up for questions. Ranking Member Alexander, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Deputy Secretary. Thank you for your very thorough presentation. In regards to the OSTDS Advisory Council, I know you spoke to us being on track to reach that date in January. Kind of how do you define us being on track? Is there a methodology of what your expectations are to determine what that is and what that means?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So we've given them a few charge questions, and if you go to Google and just do Florida DEP OSTDS TAC, for example, we have all the documents available to the public in those. So the charge questions address, like I said, the big picture items. New technologies, is there program changes that are due? How should we tackle the setbacks? Are we missing information? Those types of things. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if you know, a recommendation came back saying, hey, you really need to have more case study specific data to inform decisions. The Florida State Geologist and the Florida Geological Survey is actually in my side of the house too. So I asked them to pull all of the peer-reviewed reports that have done on septic, and they gave me, so it's the way they wrote it up, they wrote the title and gave me a paragraph. So about two different studies fit on a page. Four of them were from Florida, and there was only 14 total, and that's worldwide that they could dig up. So I say that to say I wouldn't be surprised if there's a recommendation of we need more basin-specific information or studies before you start setting something in stone.
Representative Honchowski.
Thank you, Chair. I just had one quick question regarding the new permits. You mentioned that some were actually just replacement. Do you know what the percentage is between how many of those new permits are brand new installations and how many are replacement?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
I do not, Representative, but I will get the number and get it to your office.
Members, we're in questions. Questions? So I do have a question for you, and I appreciate you kind of addressing it right at the end, but a number of us have heard from different constituencies, and also I've heard from some other members around those permitting delays. What's the average time as it relates to from the point in time it's applied for until they're actually granted the permit?
So, Chair, I've seen it range from 2 days to almost a month. And so obviously when we got the program and started reaching out with the county health departments, it was very useful during the discussions leading up to the transfer because all the county health departments stayed fairly well engaged with my folks directly. So rather we didn't have to go through DOH Tallahassee and then play the telephone game of getting the information back. We have contacts in all of those locations. And with the 12 people that came over from DOH, those are the folks that deal with the county. So we didn't have a loss of information there. The number one trend we can see for the county health departments thus far is the building boom increase, because going out to do a physical inspection, the county health departments are telling us they don't have enough bodies to decrease that time significantly is what we're being told.
Just as one follow-up, so you don't believe that time, probably over the last few months, that time will improve moving into the future time frame wise for a typical permit?
I wouldn't think so, sir. If the building trend continues as it goes, Chair, and if they don't change in the number of bodies, there's nothing that we would do from a regulatory or oversight perspective. If it's literally just a you can't visit the field until then, there's nothing we could do through regulations to accelerate that.
Well, I appreciate the comments you've made and offering for folks to reach out if there's trouble as it relates to that for some of our constituents. Members, who are in questions? Representative Diamond?
I just have a comment, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman. The presentation was excellent, and I just wanted to make this comment because I think you were alluding to it with regard to the rulemaking, but I, thinking about it, wanted to say it explicitly, which is that, so much of the success of this legislation, from my perspective, is going to turn on the rulemaking, obviously, and the devil's in the details. And I think you were getting at that when you were talking about the DOH rules and how you're thinking about those. But I mean, from my perspective, we're so late to the party here. The challenges we have with water quality in Florida are so significant. When I think back about the blue-green algae task force report and that 1,000 people are moving to Florida every day, and it's all in these rules in terms of whether they're clear and enforceable and effective. And I just wanted to say that and thank you, because I heard you sort of alluding to that, but I think the importance of the rulemaking in making this work just can't be overstated.
Members, we're in questions? Questions? Okay, seeing no more questions, Deputy Secretary, we so much appreciate you coming out and doing both these presentations. You've been very active, engaged, and appreciate your comments here today, and we'll look forward to spending some time with you next week.
All right. Thank you, Chair.
Members. Thank you. Members, I also wanted, as we move to conclude, I know we're getting towards the end of the week. I'm glad everyone could make it because I know we're one of the last committee meetings for the week, and I want to wish everyone safe travels home, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week, and we've got a little preview of what we're going to be talking about. And so with that, and seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Overdorf moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting's adjourned.